That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky presenting a Power Word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. Words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint it gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works. Grand piano.
If it's Friday and you've already bailed on that New Year's resolution, then it's Bluegrass Bios on WLXU, LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. Benjaneer Wolf.
Hey, Kyle.
He of the gray templed wisdom and spectacles.
Yeah, getting there, yeah.
We'll be in studio all show until 2 o'clock. I'm Kyle, and I'll be your ringmaster for the first hour of the program. Speaking of, in about 10 minutes, we'll have Robin Kunkel of the organization Central Kentucky showing up for Racial Justice, or CKY Surge. Their Lexington chapter will be holding their January meeting next Tuesday, 6 p.m. at Wild Fig Books and Coffee, 726 North Limestone, to discuss and plan the year's campaign for educating the community on racial justice.
Wow.
Hour two, Chuck C. will be wearing a beard.
So probably, so yeah. Those are the odds.
It's 50 or 100% more bearded in the second hour of the program. So if that's your bag, if you've got some kind of a lumberjack.
You have no beard. I have a scruffy beard. And then Chuck manages to average us all out to 1.5.
I vacillate between the beard and the no beard because it ends up. And it's, I know for a lot of guys it becomes an itchiness thing, but to me it's like there's a commitment element to it, because I recognize at this point, if you don't want to look like a fur trapper, like you got to get your clipper game down.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not disciplined enough to put like the heads on the clippers and go there and do the whole thing, and because that's part of the
that's what I do.
There's a maintenance
involved
to the beard.
Yes, there is.
Because otherwise, unless you're one of the few fortunate people who all the hairs, they kind of grow at the same rate. Like most guys like me, you can get to avoid the patchiness thing. You have to keep bringing it down, letting the slower members of the class catch up. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Right. So that's the whole key to it.
Pretty much, yeah, or you got to let it grow to a length that covers up the patchiness. There are multiple ways of doing this.
So
the only difficult part about maintenance, really, are whiskers in the sink. Just getting those all down the drain. They go everywhere. They stick everywhere. Getting those down the drain is the toughest part.
All that to say that the second hour is is significantly more patient, let's say that.
Yes, that's true. And mellow, we said that the second hour is a little more NPR-ish.
Okay.
If hour one is pepperoni pizza, maybe a vegetable or two, but mostly meat pizza, then the second hour is feta cheese and spinach.
It's with more artisanal.
Sun-dried tomatoes on a gluten-free crust.
Well,
that is the pizza of the second hour.
And you know, I don't take that as an insult at all, because my aim for this hour
different.
is to be empty calories. we'll have Robin Kunkel on, and she's going to echo a theme that we return to quite frequently on this program, because it's kind of close to me. I know it's close to Ben.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me the way that they've decided to name their organization or group showing up for racial justice. Now, there's two elements of that before I ask you how your holidays were. There are two elements of that that stand out to me, that, and starting with the latter, the calling it racial justice, not pointing out racial injustice. Not, it's not pointing the finger. It's more of a – it seems more to me of an advocacy.
Well, one of the ways people who are intolerant and ignorant – really go after the other side of the aisle is nitpicking over semantics and the words. And, oh, your lives matter? Are you saying my life doesn't matter? So just very carefully worded, racial justice, equal playing field.
Right.
Level the playing field. So that becomes important. And then, of course, showing up.
Showing up. Which, and that's something that I want to ask her about, too, because the language that we've been using, speaking of semantics, and we are in a, you know, the highly advanced society of sort of discourse that we have in 2016-17 tends to, we can get mired in the semantics, but the showing up versus just sheer awareness, the awareness to me has always been kind of this, like, it's a passive thing, right? Like, you can be
a little bit,
you can be aware up to your forehead, but
if you don't do anything, what good is it, really? It's basically in baby steps. I'm a little bit older than you are, so I've seen
hence the gray temples
and the gray chin and all that, and gray eyebrows. Everything's getting gray
soul.
And so it started out with awareness because, honestly, people weren't aware there were racial problems in the 80s.
Yeah.
It was all completely swept under the rug, out of sight, out of mind. So that was the first step. Now it is time to move beyond that step. And I think we are. We're a couple of steps beyond awareness. And now it's time to show up and actually start saying things.
Well, unlike how I tend to have my close friends come in here, I've never met Robin before, so we will get her. We're going to meet her from the very beginning, and we're going to get her thoughts and the message of her organization before she comes on, which will be in just a few minutes. Ben, we were off the air last week.
Yeah.
Or, well, there was a show, but we didn't, nothing new, at least.
No.
How was your holiday season?
Pleasant.
Yeah?
Quiet.
What'd you do?
Nice. Almost nothing.
Okay.
Almost nothing, next to nothing. I had to go see Grandpa up in the old folks' home, because if you want to say it with me, this could be Grandpa's last Christmas, which is something we've said, I think, every year for the past 12 or 13 years. This was his 100th Christmas.
My God.
Because he turned 99 about a month ago. So had to go up to see Grandpa. And then, you know, he's really not much for going out, you know, these days. And he's not like saying, hey, let's go shopping, or let's go paint the town red, or even let's go out to eat. He's perfectly content hanging out around the retirement place hanging out with us.
How can you have more Christmases than birthdays? I don't understand that.
Oh, because he...
Are we counting?
Was a Christmas before he turned one. So he was born December 18th and then had a Christmas right there. So that's at zero. At age zero, he had a Christmas. Oh, so okay. At zero plus, adding his one plus 99.
Okay, that makes sense.
Equaling 100.
I want to ask you this. Did you stay up for midnight on New Year's Eve?
Yes, I did.
Okay, all right.
But now, I was at home.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was also at home, and I'm starting to get concerned with my lack of enthusiasm on some of these holidays.
Well, you could do what I do, and I just tell people I have social anxiety disorder, which is actually true. So New Year's Eve is not a fun night for me, really. And the other 364 days of the year, I'm more likely to go out. It's just less.
Well, it's amateur night.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's less visual stimulation, less people, you know, that kind of thing.
I don't particularly like crowds either.
Yeah.
But as somebody, a friend of mine pointed out to me, it's a fear of missing out holiday. Like, that's practically, because I don't care to miss Halloween, but for some reason, more than any other, being alone on New Year's somehow heralds, your loneliness.
I think when they
underscores
put
it.
When they put the kissing in there, you're supposed to kiss somebody on New Year's
Eve. That's what it is.
That's what did it. Now when you go out and you're by yourself, you got to watch all these friggin' people kiss all over the place, and that amplifies your loneliness and it makes you feel bad.
Yeah.
So just, you know,
well, yeah, but
watch Don Lemon get drunk.
But here's
on
the
CNN.
Thing. Here's the thing. And unlike Valentine's Day, which is a couple's holiday, New Year's is not a couple's holiday.
They're trying to make it one.
No, but
you see them actively doing
it. The point, you could potentially go out and meet another. It should be a great singles holiday, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because two single people, they're going to feel obligated to at least get a peck.
Sure.
And, you know, you see where that goes.
Right on.
So there seems to be, there's like no effort toward exploration in that.
That's true. I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah, they're taking this away from us.
It's depressing.
It is depressing. Well, I also had a birthday.
Oh, you did?
I had a birthday on Friday. So I'm
happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'm 42.
42.
Do we have to do that show again where I point out all the facts about the number 42?
You can go from memory right now if you want.
There was only two of them, as I recall.
Well, yeah, it's Jackie Robinson and Douglas Adams, really, I think.
Yeah.
And then, what else? Lost?
I think molybdenum. It's the number of millennia. On that striking note, I think Robin should be here any moment. So
cool.
Stay tuned. We're going to veer away from this hot molybdenum talk and discuss racial justice in Central Kentucky with Robin Kunkel next. Stay tuned.
Are you thinking of buying a new car? At Galaxy Auto Sales, you can find new and used cars. Galaxy can find a car that fits your style and prices that fit your pockets. Galaxy Auto Sales is located at 1091 East New Circle Road in Lexington. For more information, you can call 859-523-0601. Lexington Community Radio thanks Galaxy Auto Sales for supporting True Community Radio.
Winter often brings harsh weather with it, and you don't want to be stuck out in the cold. So be prepared. During cold temperatures, you should let your vehicle warm up before you drive away. Let it sit idle for a few minutes, then drive it slowly for a few miles to allow fluids to reach the moving parts. Another good tip is to make sure your antifreeze levels are good. Remember to mix your antifreeze with water in a 50-50 solution to be properly used. More is not always better. Winter car maintenance is important to keep your car running and keeping you on time.
This message is brought to you by the LCR Safe Driver Campaign, a partnership between State Farm and Lexington Community Radio.
Hi, I'm John Lackey from Homegrown Press, and we don't eat tempeh Rubens anymore. And you're listening to WLXL LPFM, Lexington Community Radio.
Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. I'm Kyle. Ben's in here.
Hey, Kyle.
And we're joined by Robin Kunkel. She, a organizer for Central Kentucky, showing up for racial justice at CKY Surge. She's part of the Lexington chapter. Their monthly meeting will be held at Wild Fig on Tuesday the 10th at 6 p.m. at 726 North Limestone. It's the second Tuesday of every month. Is that correct?
Yes.
Robin?
Yes, that is correct.
How are you doing today, by the way?
I'm good. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming in on short notice.
Anytime.
So, I guess first tell us about this. It's affiliated with Black Lives Matter, or is sort of an offshoot of Black Lives Matter. Is there an association there? I know as far as being organized, it's somewhat loose.
Yeah, as far as an organization goes, it's pretty similar. And part of the reason is that Surge is really aimed at putting the burden of education on white people instead of going up to people of color and demanding that they tell us things and teach us things.
Right, okay.
So that's the main difference. Surge started in 2009 after a lot of backlash against President Obama. There was a lot of racism that kind of came out of that situation. And so people started to get together to counteract that among other white people.
Is this a national movement, or is there a Minnesota Surge?
There's a lot of Surge chapters, actually, all over the country. And this one is relatively new. It's about a year old. So there was a bit of a hiatus, and then this summer it just took off.
Do you know where it started, or is this, did it kind of all come up at once?
I think a lot of chapters started at once.
Is this like a social media sort of movement type of Arab Spring? Everybody kind of became aware at the same time through just...
I think that happened for a lot of chapters. And then slowly other ones in different states started popping up.
Certainly, this is, it's kind of a rhetorical question, but why is it incumbent on white people to have more involvement in racial justice? Why can't these people just stand up and take it for themselves?
Because it's not their job to. There's already so much that people of color experience on a daily basis. So they're already doing the work of, you know, taking that burden of racism. You know, they're the ones going through it firsthand. And if someone is put in a position where they're being oppressed, we can't really expect them to, you know, sit down calmly and explain to them why this hurts their feelings. And, you know, they shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't tolerate that kind of behavior from people.
So how does this work? This it's showing up, right? So this is beyond awareness at this point. How does Surge work?
Well, we have our monthly meetings, and those are really to kind of connect people, because a big part of what Surge does is just ask you to talk to people in your daily life. You know, it's not trendy activism. You know, you show up one day, you've done your good deed, and then you're done. It's a lifestyle. You know, if you really want to counteract racism, it's present everywhere, so you have to deal with it everywhere. Whether in politics, with your family, as much as we hate to have those conversations at Thanksgiving, you know, that's part of what we ask people to do. And it's not about being angry or confrontational. It's really trying to get to the heart of why people have accepted these racist behaviors and thoughts without understanding how bad they are.
Are you from the South?
I'm from Kentucky.
Okay.
So whatever we want to call that.
I call it the pseudo-South.
Pseudo-South. Okay, that works.
Well, have you personally had to face any sort of uncomfortable positions by taking this on as in the foreground of your life?
It's definitely put me in some awkward positions. I've never been the one who's been very threatened, at least not physically. But we do have shirts that say white silence is white violence on the back. And the first day I wore that, I felt like there was a target on me. And people just stared at me, and it was a really strange experience. But the more that I wore it, the more response I got from people who would say, you know, what does that mean? Can you tell me about that? And it was less scary and more exciting to talk to people.
Now, when you talk to black people, what do they feel about your efforts to their end? And I guess this is not just, African Americans. We're talking about racial justice. The first thing, the one that is, comes top to my mind is African American injustice, but obviously we're talking about everyone. So how do other people, non-white people, respond to a movement, to your shirt like that? You know, will you have a black guy come up to you and say, hey, good on you, whatever it is?
I've definitely had some people kind of, you know, give me the power fist in the air, or just a thumbs up as they walk by. I haven't had a ton of people of color talk to me in depth about it, but again, that's not the point. It's to get white people to talk to me about it. It's our job to fix it.
When we're talking about fixing, what are we saying here?
Well, it's a big picture kind of fight. It's not a in 3 months we'll have one kind of fight. So it's really about not just thinking about, you know, what kind of racism have you learned without even noticing, you know, the things you heard as a child, the things that you accepted as normal that you can come to find out or not, including a lot of stereotypes. It's about really learning how racism plays into our government, into our schools, into decision making. You know, some things are considered the norm. You know, white is considered the norm. A lot of times man is considered the norm, you know. So that's what a lot of our country serves, is white people. So it's not just about looking at, like, obviously confrontational behaviors like racial slurs and physical violence. It's about learning how those little things, you know, being treated as other and as different and less, is really what racism is.
Is there any sort of mild behavior on your part that you sort of a light bulb went off in your head and thought, oh no, I'm doing this, and it's sort of very soft kind of thing.
I did. There was a time where, and I still struggle with this, I have to be really mindful of my words and how I mention people without assuming things about them. I definitely had a us and them kind of line drawn in my head. And I think a lot of that was because the town I grew up in was just 100% white. And I was there till I was 18 and I came here for college. So I didn't know a lot of people that were that different from me. So it really takes a lot of diligence to just kind of think about, okay, why did I just say that? Do I mean them, like every single person of that color feels exactly the same way? Mm. Or them as like this small group of people?
And when you talk about sort of activism for white people to participate in, is there a danger of doing a sort of white knighting or white hatting kind of thing? One of the things I always want to be careful of is I don't want to stick up for somebody who's perfectly capable of sticking up for himself, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a big part of why Surge formed, too, because there were a lot of white people in these organizations run by people of color because they felt very passionately that racism was wrong and they wanted to help and they had all of this momentum built up and they go into these spaces and just talk over everyone of color who's actually lived this experience. So they went in with really good intentions and ended up just stomping all over people. Oh, so Surge is kind of that outlet where you can take more of a leadership position and not be quieting people who really need to be heard.
So it kind of sounds a little bit like therapy in a way, just sort of getting a lot of thoughts and a lot of anger kind of out of your system. When I see a black person profiled on the news or a video on YouTube of an unarmed black person getting shot, I get angry and I want to go out and I want to talk. Does this kind of give Caucasians a space to do that where they're not talking over people?
I think it definitely does. We've had, you know, some of our meetings, people will reveal very personal information. You know, they feel like it's a safe space to talk about things that really upset them or things they don't understand. You know, it's a safe space to say, this is what I was always told to say. Why is this word bad? You know, why is that upsetting people? So, you know, it's a spot where you can come to talk about, you know, why, if someone's called you a racist, you know, that doesn't feel good, but it's not really your job to go against them and prove that you're not a racist. It's your job to not behave in a racist manner in the first place. So that's what we're trying to learn, not to prove that we're good people, but to how to actually be good people.
We're talking to Robin Kunkel. She's an organizer for Central Kentucky, Showing Up for Racial Justice, a.k.a. CKY Surge. That was a lot of letters. Too many letters. CKY Surge.
It's better than the full thing.
She's a member of the Lexington chapter. Their monthly meeting will be held at Wild Fig Books and Coffee at 726 North Limestone this Tuesday from 6 to 7:30. So it sort of sounds like this is, you know, you're saying that you grew up in an all-white town, right? Like, it kind of feels like this is a response to a lot of people, you know, to a lot of insulation that you would have, that even adults would have, right? Because you're not getting exposed to other cultures to the extent that they would, you know, it's one thing to grow up and watch Good Times or see Family Matters and understand black people conceptually, but to understand where they're coming from, that's sort of the purpose of this to some extent.
Definitely. Yeah. And we welcome people of all races, you know, who anyone is welcome to our meetings. But if a person of color shows up, it's not our job to be teaching them. They're there potentially to teach us something. And if they've done that, and, you know, we shouldn't be asking them to, but if they're willing to talk to us about their experience, we owe them enough to listen.
Well, I wonder, you know, if you're not incorporating that perspective into your meetings, are you not just pressing down on the gas pedal in neutral? You know, like, how do you carry the mantle for a group when you're actually separate from them? You know what I mean? If the Venn diagram is is away from their actual, from Black Lives Matter. Yeah. Like, I understand, like, it's sort of this self-education thing, but if you're doing that, then it can be very easy to get off track, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's why we have a lot of other organizers in town that we work with. You know, we work with DeBron Thomas and Sarah Williams, and we've, you know, even just friends in town who go through these experiences. And there are a lot of people that we trust to talk to us about these things. And we'll, you know, if we have an idea, we want to react to something a certain way, we'll kind of throw it at these people that we've worked with and say, you know, does this get the right point across? What do you think of this? Because it's, we've had situations before where someone can say, well, I have a black friend and this one black person thinks you're doing a bad thing. But a black person does not speak for all black people, nor does a white person speak for all white people. But that's a given. So really it's about working with people we trust to give us some honest feedback.
Now, if you have the racist uncle at Thanksgiving who says something remarkably stupid or completely 100% false, what's the best way to approach that situation? I was going to say, is yelling and throwing food is what I would do.
Throwing food is tempting, but I don't want to waste it.
I hadn't thought of that.
A lot of times humor is a good way to get at it because sometimes people don't realize what words just came out of their mouth. You know, they don't hear how offensive it is. It's something normal, you know. Most people wouldn't say something if they truly thought it was a terrible thing to say. So you've got to figure out, you know, why would you say that? You know, that's weird. I never would have thought of that.
Or just maybe just saying, why do you believe what you've just said? I think one of the main things is that I hear quite often is African Americans commit crime at a higher rate than everybody else. I don't know how many times I've heard it, and I don't know how many times I've heard it disproven. Mm-hmm. Where do you begin with somebody who comes at you with an attitude like that, or who says something like that at dinner?
Well, throwing statistics around doesn't seem to be effective. You know, true or not, just doesn't seem to help. And you have to realize you can't necessarily win people over immediately. Some people I think you might never win over, but I was told to look at it kind of as like a sliding scale of how with you someone is, how much in agreement they are. And you can't necessarily move someone from one far end to the other, but you can scoot everyone a notch or two closer to understanding. And a lot of it is just repetition. You know, if you talk to someone who keeps saying these things, you can't just let them slide. That validates it, you know, whether you want it to or not. It tells them that that is true and you accept it. So you can't accept it.
And I've noticed one of the problems I've run into when encountering racism is the person who says something awful and then runs out of the room. And I told this to Kyle off mic a little while ago. A couple months ago, I was at Kroger and I heard somebody yell something racist at an old black woman from their truck as the truck was speeding away. What can you do? What can I do? What should I have done in this situation? What's the appropriate way?
Well, Ben wanted to drive him down.
Yeah, I did.
With an Uzi.
Fisticuffs, Kyle.
Yes.
Like men.
Certainly.
Yes.
Like women, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anger is a valid response to a lot of that. I'm not going to say it's the most effective one. I think it can be very motivating, but really when you make a call about how you should react to something, generally it's good to calm down a little bit in that situation. You know, if the person's gone, I would suggest just going up to the person who has just been harassed and just saying, you know, are you okay? Is there anything I can do? And if they say no, let them be, because that's got to be very
traumatic. Their call.
It is their call. That's exactly the point. It's their call.
Is apologizing appropriate? Because it's not something I did or I said.
My friends of color that I've talked to about that have all said, I don't want your sorries.
Okay.
They do me no good. Want you to go out into the world and make things better. Being sorry that bad things happen and then doing nothing about them does literally nothing for me.
Robin Kunkel, organizer, Central Kentucky, showing up for racial justice. So what are some of the specific focuses you guys discuss in the Lexington chapter?
Well, a lot of it is bystander intervention, you know, how to confront someone exactly. Like we had a training recently where people kind of broke into small groups and discussed these situations we gave them. You know, here's six people, here's something horrible someone said, and these are the specifics of how well you know them, where you are, how do you think you should respond to that? And then we kind of throw it back as a group, and there's a little bit of debate because, you know, we don't all have the same methods of working against this. And I think that's important. I don't think you have to do exactly the same thing as someone else in order to work towards the same goal.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, we were talking about before you came on how the discussion has moved, or the process has moved from awareness, which, kind of began in the 80s, you were saying.
Yeah, then. Yeah. I was saying, Kyle was saying, we should be beyond awareness at this point. And my point was, being a little older than, I'm assuming, both of you, that awareness was a step we had to take at one point. And yes, now we should be past it, but mm-hmm. not something to gloss over.
And, you know, what you're talking about, you know, it's one thing to just have courage, but blind courage can be dangerous, you know? So when you're talking about actually procedurally, let's break this down with the salt and pepper shaker and the jelly, and if something's happening right here, what do I do? You know, what should I actually say? Where should I be? Should I call somebody? You know, trying to figure out where to, you know, you're walking around campus with a white silence is white violence shirt, and that takes courage. Right. And I think that you ended up finding that it wasn't misplaced courage because of the response that you received. But Ben, his form of courage was to take a machete and then knock this guy out of traffic.
That would have been sweet.
Right. As much as it can be, you know, that anger and that disappointment in your own race, speaking of white people, can kind of lead you down maybe and even just, you know, the saying that you're sorry on behalf of white people is kind of ill-advised, as you said,
it's
Robin.
Ineffective, yeah.
So to take that motivation of from awareness to, okay, let's pull out a playbook, here's what you actually should do, mm-hmm. right? That's the showing up part.
That, and also taking direction from people of color, because just in that situation, you know, mm-hmm. you ask the woman who was harassed, you ask the woman of color if there's anything you can do. And if she says no, you respect her decision, just as you would respect anybody else's. You know, we wouldn't expect to see a white person coddled. no, I know what's best for you. That's not true. And right. sometimes that's how that treatment comes in. That's where we get that white savior complex, that I know better. Yeah. I should make the decisions. Absolutely not true. You know, we have to work together. And so you have to be willing to take leadership from people of color when they're fighting this battle.
Outside of those meetings, what type of events are you trying to put into place?
Well, we're definitely going to do some more film screenings. We already had one.
Film screenings?
Yeah, we screened 13th, which is available on Netflix. It's free for anybody to watch. But the reason we hosted a screening of it, a free one, was that we wanted there to be discussion afterwards. You know, we wanted people to see it and not just be isolated and feel like, well, you know, I did that, now what? And so we also had a couple of people from an organization called Mission Behind Bars and Beyond come mm-hmm. talk to us, because they work with people who are incarcerated while they're incarcerated and also once they're released. And 13th has a lot to do with how mass incarceration really is the new slavery. So it was a really great discussion. People opened up. We had black people and white people sharing experiences and thoughts on it. And a lot of people make connections at these events and then go on to do other work with one another outside of Surge. And that's what's really been great.
Well, I guess that's if we're talking about awareness as the stepping stone to action, is Surge a gateway for white people to understand the playing field enough to then go to a Black Lives Matter rally or meeting or some place where they aren't, now that you know that not to talk over people and to sit and listen, you know, is that sort of the training grounds to get on the same level?
Definitely. I feel like our members are very well equipped to do that. Most of what seems to hold people back from participating in those things is they feel like they don't know anything, and it turns out it's not true. they're afraid to speak for, you know, they don't want to make mistakes. They don't want to say something wrong or use the wrong terminology. People have this fear of being politically correct, and that's not what it's about. It's about being respectful. So, yeah, our members are definitely not just remaining isolated and staying within their little white surge group. It's, you know, they're going out into the community and starting their own things.
Excellent. I want to know who some of your favorite speakers in the area are on these matters.
Favorite speakers.
I'm not putting you on the spot.
Definitely.
Or just leaders.
I will say DeBron Thomas says he is not an organizer, and he is absolutely wrong. He has gotten so many people together with the Take Back Cheapside campaign, and it's made amazing progress.
What is that, Take Back Cheapside?
Take Back Cheapside is a movement to make the Cheapside Pavilion a more respectful space for the entire community, because the problem right now is that Cheapside was one of the largest slave auction sites in all of the country. And right now we have two Confederate statues in that space. And we were not part of the Confederacy, so it seems a little odd that we have those. One of our goals is to have those statues moved to a location that still respects the history of those figures and what they mean to this area, but also doesn't speak over what else happened. And then we also want to have some other artwork and historical monuments installed that shows some honor to the people who were sold there.
Yeah, you hear that, DeBron? We're coming after you next, my friend.
Love you.
It's been great. Thank you for coming in once again on short notice, Robin.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
And if people want to get in touch with you, the website Show Up for Racial Justice?
There is a national website, but I'd recommend you go to our Facebook page, which is the main thing we use right now, and that's facebook.com/CKY Surge.
Okay.
And then we
S-U-R-J.
Have S-U-R-J, yes.
Okay, very good.
And we also have a member discussion page. Our official page is more for campaign updates and things like that. But our member discussion page is facebook.com/group/CKY Surge member discussion. Okay. It's long, but it's exactly what you're looking for, so it shouldn't be any confusion.
Once again, Robin Kunkel, organizer of that organization she just said, the Lexington chapter. Their monthly meeting, let's see if I can get this right, which is the second Tuesday of every month from 6 p.m. to 7:30 at Wild Fig Books and Coffee, 726 North Limestone, coming up this Tuesday, the 10th. So if you are interested, then come and check it out. Thank you again, Robin.
Yes, thank you.
All right, we'll be right back on Bluegrass Bios to wrap up the first hour. We're about to head into our most bearded hour of the week. This is Lexington Community Radio.
Furniture and Electronics Rabbit has a wide selection of dining rooms, dressers, beds and center tables, home decorations, pots, pans, and all home utensils, tools of all types, microwaves, blenders, silver jewelry, and perfumes, all types of video games for Xbox, Wii, PS4, PS3, and Nintendo DS. Our doors are open Tuesday to Sunday, 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. We are closed Sunday and Monday. Furniture and Electronics Rabbit is located at 1814 Oxford Circle in Lexington. For more information, you can call 859-948-3882. Thank you, Furniture and Electronics Rabbit, for supporting True Community Radio.
This is Lydia Jacobs, host of Aging Adventures. We keep everyone up to date on what's going on in the senior community in Lexington, conferences available, how to stay healthy. We talk to a wide range of people, professionals, individuals who are paving their own way in the aging world. Aging Adventures with host Lydia Jacobs on Fridays, 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on 93.9 WLXU, a Lexington community radio. But in passing, we'll grow
older every day. Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios, wrapping up the first hour of our first show of the new year.
Yay!
Yay, welcome
back. Bye, 2016.
Yeah, enough
see
of
ya.
You.
See ya.
Speaking of bye to 2016, so I did a purge of 2016, and I did this on New Year's Day.
Oh.
And I want you to check this out.
Please.
All right. So I wanted to get 2016 completely out of my system, right?
Right.
So I stayed up. I stayed up until midnight on New Year's Eve, and then even a little bit after, and then I ate some 2-week-old guacamole.
Oh.
And then threw up from 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. on New Year's Day.
Now, was this intentional?
No.
Or is this happy accident?
No, that was not intentional. But and I do not, if you're trying to get over 2016, ladies and gentlemen, I do not recommend taking that route. Although it turns out that even green guacamole can have an effect on you.
Oh, yeah, if it's been around for
a while. It wasn't even brown.
Oh, no.
Anyway, we can probably cut that.
I'll trim it down, but I'm not cutting that whole thing out. That's gold. That's radio gold.
So what did you think about Miss Robin Kunkel?
I liked her. I liked her a lot, and that was very interesting. And, yeah, we may have to go down to one of these meetings just to kind of get a little bit better feel for what they're about. I think it's a great idea.
I like it, but, you know, it's sort of like it reminds me of the diversity class that I took at UK that ended up being the reason that I left UK. There is a good discussion to be had about diversity. Now, if you are coming from square zero and you've never met a black person in your life until you are 18, then yes, you probably need first of all, even if you're not a bad person, you probably feel very awkward talking to black people, talking to Hispanic people, talking to Asian people, because all you know is stereotypes and possibly some prejudice from your immediate family. So you can come into an environment that's diverse, and all of a sudden you need a crash course. Now, the problem with that, and what a lot of response that I think resulted in some of the electorate voting for Trump, is going so far in one direction as to say that every form of diversity is good, which is not reality.
Well, how do you mean? Could you elaborate?
Okay,
on that?
Well, here's the problem. When you literally say that every form of diversity is good, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, or the inverse of that. What can you think of?
You're bathing the baby in dirty water?
Certainly. Yeah, no, that's good. Look, there are things that we consider to be amoral socially that are forms of diversity. Now, if we want to say all forms of racial diversity are good, well, good. Let's just start there and let's focus on that. Let's talk about cultures, and we can talk about constants within culture. You know, I'm sure just like when you talk about how one black person doesn't represent all black people, one white person doesn't represent all white people, but we do tend to have tendencies. Would you agree?
Yes.
You know, that's sort of part of the whole thing. To be able to sit down in this environment like Surge and talk about, okay, look, here is the socialization that you are used to, and you think that, you know, you have this misconception that black people are dangerous, that they are felons, that they are whatever it is, whatever negative stereotype, that they all talk in Ebonics. Yeah, I don't even know if that's a term that's used anymore. But this is...
I forgot about it.
But to be able to go, hey, let's rebuild your perspective on this minority culture. Like, that's a good thing. Now, when you're saying every form of diversity is good, then what you're doing is you're taking away people's judgment. Is, for instance, Ben...
Yeah, can you give me an example that I can...
How about incest?
Oh, is diversity?
That's a social practice.
It's also statutory rape.
Sure.
Which is against the law.
Right. Here's my point. When we're talking about why a group like Surge is necessary, it's because I imagine many of its members come from point zero and need a re-education. The problem is when you are in a vacuum, when you have a whitewash group, and as Robin pointed out, they have people of color come in and make sure that they're on the right track. But in some of these sterile environments that I've experienced, like, it can get very much into, here's a little bit of diversity, now let's run away with it, and now I don't have any judgment on what's good or bad anymore. To understand the history of African Americans in this country is to understand their plight with a lot of things, you know, housing, mm-hmm. getting stuck in urban centers, the poverty that exists there, and the draconian drug laws that are, you know, as she said,
absolutely,
the prison sentences that are a second form of slavery. Like, to understand that is to understand the plight of the African American. But to take that and say that all black people are good, well, then I think you're missing the mark. You should be doing is looking at a historical perspective and not discounting cultures that are different from your own, not saying everything that is different from me is good, because that is stupid.
I wouldn't use a blanket statement or over a generalization like saying...
I'm quoting a college class.
They told you at UK that all diversity is good, and whatever anybody thinks is okay because they come from a different culture than you.
That was chapter one.
No, I think when you say all diversity is good, that means exposure to people who are different from you, who are of a different gender, who are of a different race, who are of a different sexual orientation. That's good. Getting to know people and understanding people and the different types of people in the world. That's good.
And behavior.
It sounds like this particular course at UK has kind of taken things a little too far.
Yeah, well, welcome to 2017. And welcome to 2017, ladies and gentlemen. That's going to do it for us in the first hour of Bluegrass Bios. Stay tuned for the heavily bearded Chuck C when he talks to, hang on, I have it right here, Scott Whitten, the guitarist for Palisades, that's a band, and head of the Writing Center at Transylvania University. The lightly bearded Benjamin Wolf will be on hand as well. Ben, we're going to do this again next week?
Yes, we are.
All right, certainly. And I think we had a good show. Let's keep it up as we go further into the year. For Kyle, signing off, have a great weekend, Lexington.